This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org.
This is Walter Koenig, Chekhov from Star Trek, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Risk is our business.
It's like nothing we've dealt with before.
By golly, Jim, I'm beginning to think I can cure a rainy day.
I can't change the laws of physics.
Welcome, everyone, to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated podcast that covers the original and new cast of Captain Kirk and the Enterprise. I am Ken.
And I am Zach Moore, and we have a very special guest, our newest associate producer to Standard Orbit, Mr. Nicholas Anastasio. Great to have you aboard, Nicholas.
Hey, guys. It's really nice to be on board. It's my pleasure.
Now, I said your name right, correct?
You actually did, yes.
Yes,
sir.
Practice makes perfect.
My friends actually gave up, even though actually all of them know how to say my name now, but they a long time ago they started calling me Nika, basically to not even have to wonder or bother. And they even introduced me now as like, oh, just call him Nika. Just call him Nika.
That's great, man. Well, yeah, thanks again for becoming a patron, one of our social producers, man. We really appreciate that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I mean, the network has been, I've been a listener for like 2 years now. And I'm buddies with Matt Rushing, and the network has been part of my life just the way Star Trek has been part of my life. And so I always told, I've told Matt for a long time, like, I want to get to a place where I can kind of arrange my finances and stuff and my bills so that I can distribute what I, you know, the money that I can spare to what's worthy. And I told him the second I can, I want to help the network out. So yeah, I'm really happy. And I love Standard Orbit, so yeah, it's my pleasure.
Well, it is the best show on the network, so you have good taste.
Hands down.
Yeah, no offense to Matt, but yeah, we've listened to you, Nick. I've enjoyed hearing you on 602, and I've heard you on Aggressive Negotiations, so you're making the rounds, which is great. And Matt, he's a cool guy, and he actually pulled me into the network too, which is kind of funny. And listening to his shows, and you know, he just has that draw, that personality, just a real legitimate good guy.
He is. He's just a good guy, and you can tell he's professional all the way through, but he's also just very genuine. You know, you can feel his passion and his love for the stuff that he talks about. So, yeah.
So Nick, you came up with a pretty cool subject, and we're ready to run for it. Would you explain the premise you had for our conversation in this episode today?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I've always loved, you know, Standard Orbit for since you guys took over is the way that you have found to meld different subjects and conversations about TOS, the original crew, and TOS, the reboot cast. When after I joined the network as a Patreon, you know, Ken and I messaged back and forth, and he was saying, you know, if you have come up with topic ideas, let us know. And then that jumped at me just based on that. I was saying, well, you know, I just really love kind of the passing of the torch, generations, you know, of Star Trek from cast to cast, series to series, fans, how new fans can come into Star Trek and then rediscover TOS through the new cast. And so I thought, well, if anything, what I'd love to talk about is find something which is an opportunity to talk about that, the mingling of the two casts and TOS living on, and how, you know, it's new generations of actors, new generation of Star Trek, but new generations of fans. And so out of that kind of, I was driving to work and I was like, well, these guys are basically taking over the mantle. What would be cool is to imagine how would they be, because there's a conscious choice, which I think is really cool, for them to embody the personalities and certain traits that we love of the TOS original cast. But at the same time, at this point, what I love about the reboot cast is they've really kind of, it feels like they've gained confidence in sort of making the roles their own. And so I thought, well, how would these characters playing the namesakes we know, but with this slant, how would they react in some of the stories we know and we've seen, we love from TOS? And that's kind of how the idea came. Well, what if we picked our top, you know, three or four, two, you know, favorite episodes or episodes that we would love to see redone, but with the reboot cast? And then I pitched it to Ken, and then he talked about it with you, and we went from there.
Yeah, there we go. And I liked it a lot. And since the other thing I like too is, you know, we haven't spoken about which episodes each other likes, which is nice. So this will all come up very, very fresh and generic in terms of our conversation. And I'm
organic,
ready to get going.
Not generic.
Organic. Is that what,
generically organic.
Guys, this is going to be a real generic discussion. So buckle your seatbelts.
All right. Be nice to the geriatric, okay?
I'm right behind you, Ken. Don't worry.
I still got you by a few years there, Nick. So, all right. So if we're ready, let's go. Nicholas, as you are the guest, please tell us your number three pick.
Number three. So overall, what kind of drove my choices was my favorite things about the reboot cast is the dynamics between the actor. I think what they really nailed is the rapport and the chemistry between the characters on screen, their namesakes, and the actors. To me, it really feels, I can feel those bonds of friendship between the cast members. And they really, I think, whether it's Carl Urban and Quinto, or Quinto and Chris Pine, you really feel like there's this gelling of the characters and the actors. So I wanted to kind of like, everything had this filter of finding episodes and stories that had the what I thought would be the most for these guys to play on if they were going to redo those stories.
So just for clarification, we're just talking, just so all the listeners know, are we talking about making these movies, or are they just updated episodes, like an hour of television? Like what's the, well, just so everybody knows what we're talking about here, what's our approach here?
You know, that's a good question. I was actually talking about that, sort of telling a friend of mine what we were going to talk about tonight, and he asked the same question. Well, are you basically using the plot of an episode and making a movie out of it, or are you just making an hour long? And At first I right away went to movie. I think if we're going to stick with the original idea, then we would say, okay, well, if it was an hour episode, and if we're remaking the show with the new cast, let's have it be an hour. So I would say, you know, we're basically retelling, and we can make it, you know, today television, if we can still even call it television, is so much more complex and nuanced and subtle than it was back 50 years ago, that I think you could do an hour of TV or streaming and still have it feel like very cinematic. So absolutely. I would say, yeah, let's do it would stay within the same format.
Alrighty.
So the first one, I kind of wanted to do one, since we said we were going to do three, I wanted to do one which would be more of a comedy, one of the comedy episodes of Trek, one which would be kind of what I call the oddball, sort of the ones that are not necessarily the ones that people would put on their top 10 favorite lists of TOS episodes, and one iconic TOS episode. So for my number three, I'm going to pick the comedy one first. And okay. I picked A Piece of the Action.
All right.
Excellent. Yeah.
Because I love, first of all, I love that episode. It's one of my favorites. I love Tribbles, but like there's something about Piece of the Action where kind of like what I was talking about for the reboot cast, and that's actually what mandated. So I read it. That was the first one I thought of, because I can, when I watch A Piece of the Action, I can see Shatner and Nimoy having fun doing it.
Right.
It, to me, it's palpable on screen that they're like, oh, this is, we're just going to go we're going to go to town with this. And so I was like, well, you know, that's perfect for the new cast to kind of have a chance to play and then stretch their comedy and then just, you know, be who they are probably in between takes, but on screen.
You know, Nick, as you were saying that, the other element of that episode wouldn't just be this new cast playing those characters, but there's a lot of folks out there that play good gangsters nowadays that could have a lot of fun with this. You know, immediately I'm thinking, geez, could, you know, De Niro too old to pull it off, or Al Pacino, or, you know, they go to DiCaprio. You just think of all these guys who played gangsters lately, and could they get pulled into this and have fun? Did you have any thoughts along, you know, who you'd have in some of the supporting cast roles?
I didn't really think about it, but like, now that you mentioned that, the first one that maybe it's an obvious choice, but the first one that would come to my mind is Steve Buscemi.
Yeah,
because, you know, he's playing one on HBO, and he basically is like, he's such a, he's got, like, from the Coen Brothers movies, he's got a really good sense of comedy also. So yeah. I could totally see him play the gangster and at the same time, you know, hamming it up. Yeah, I mean, and imagine Pacino from Dick Tracy, you know, yeah. Same thing, over the top. Yeah.
Academy Award nominated performance for Dick Tracy, by the way.
Yep.
Is that true?
Yeah, no, it was, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
You don't think it was worthy of an Oscar nomination, Kay?
I only saw it once and tried to do that mind thing that Spock did to Kirk, you know, just to
forget.
Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, the you know, Pacino and De Niro have become they've become very self-aware, so I think they could do it. I think DiCaprio, you know, maybe, I don't know. These are all fun choices, because no, I totally get what you're saying, Dick, about the cast having a good time. That would be fun to see, because it really has been a lot of, you know, darkness, no pun intended, in this trilogy of movies we've gotten so far. It would be nice to just lighten things up, you know, pull a Star Trek 4. Go, you know, like, as they said, there have been so much death and life and death, they wanted to lighten it up with Star Trek 4. Same approach with something like this. It'd be nice to see just through things, just people having fun for a change.
I totally agree. And I mean, you know, the reboot features have sort of have parallels to the original TOS features, to a greater or lesser success, like The Darkness. But it would be cool to, if, like, the fourth film, whatever the story is, actually kind of embraced the same themes, like you were saying, as the Voyage Home did, of sort of, okay, well, we took you down, or not necessarily down, but everything got intense and very, you know, very big, and now maybe we can do a smaller, lighter story, which is still very much completely Star Trek. And if it's Simon Pegg writing it, you know, he obviously knows and obviously understands, respects, and loves Star Trek. So I'm sure that even with that kind of different tone, I would totally trust him to get it.
Now, would the book still be the Chicago mobs of the 20s? Would that still be the...
Well, you know, it would have to be because, and I hate to say this to all the Enterprise naysayers, but what Trek series is more embraced than any other in the reboot movies? Enterprise. Hmm. And we've established that book is a direct, you know, it's basically from
saw it on a shelf. Yeah. Yeah.
So if it's going to be that, then yeah, it would have to be the book. Yep.
All righty. There it is.
I like it. That was a great first choice. All right, Zach, you're up, buddy.
So I didn't really, I like your approach there, kind of one of each, Nick. I didn't really, we'll see, I guess, what we consider mine when all three are revealed. But, I just took an episode, my first one here, my number three choice, to be an episode that I like a lot, that I feel like really gets lost in the shuffle, and I feel like would benefit from a modern update, and that is What Are Little Girls Made Of? That's the one where they talk about androids, and we see all this supposedly ancient and amazing technology, which is not that amazing looking in the 1960s budget. I mean, you talk about, you know, you find a lost civilization. It's almost like Lovecraftian, right? You find this lost civilization with all this technology, can do this crazy stuff. And they go down there, and it's like some buttons on a wall and a green slab of some kind of material that you spin around real fast in terms of an android. I'm thinking, you know, you do this with the Kelvin County Alliance sensibilities. You get like just epic shots of like machinery and just open the whole scope of the whole thing of like this lost civilization, all this technology. And, you know, in talking about artificial intelligence, look at Westworld right now, right? That's what they're talking about entirely. So the themes are relevant, more relevant than ever right now. You know, we're approaching that point, that's a singularity, right, where artificial intelligence becomes self-aware. So much of that is so relevant today. And that's, you know, so much of Star Trek, we're talking about it 50 years later, right? But so much of it is, but even more so than the general, like, look at how far technology has come and we have cell phones and all that, right? Like, I'm talking, like, we're talking about creating androids right now, and that's what this episode is about. And then, like, could you transfer your consciousness into an android? And, like, because, you know, that's going to be the next logical step, right? When these things exist, people are going to want to extend their lives and do it that way. And what part of the soul is human, and this intangible thing that gets lost in the translation? And I really like this episode, and I think when you open up the scope of it, you kind of take the 60s veneer off of it, and I still love it. We're the original series podcast here. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, you repackage it for new audiences, it's going to be accepted more. And my casting choices, okay, would be for Ruck, you got to go with Dave Bautista, right? He's Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy. He played Jinx in...
Yeah, Inspector.
Yeah, not Jinx. What's his name? Hinks. Mr.
Hinks. Mr. Hinks. Yeah, Mr. Hinks.
That's the wrong James Bond film, everybody.
And the wrong gender, but
yeah, I know, right? Ooh. So Mr. Hinks, he's probably most famous for those two roles. So say he would be Ruck. He's, you know, the modern day Ted Cassidy. There's just huge guy and very intimidating. I think he could play that role well. And Andrea, now I must say, Andrea is she's got to be my favorite original series guest actress. Beautiful, great performance. So that's a tough one to recast. And it's tough not to cross the streams too much here, you know, Star Trek and Star Wars, but you got J.J. Abrams going on back and forth, so I'm gonna go ahead and cross the streams. I'm gonna say Natalie Portman for Andrea. So that's my casting. They're the main two guest stars, and to be honest, although the whole plot does revolve around Dr. Corby, I didn't really think of a maybe you guys have a suggestion. I'm open to suggestion. He's kind of a blank slate. He's not as visually memorable for various reasons as the other two. So I don't know, he's kind of blank slate. I think you could just cast any respectable middle-aged actor in that role and he could pull it off well. So that's my take. That's my number three. What are little girls made of?
Awesome. Yeah, I like it, because like you were saying, I think both on a creative and a technical standpoint, you know, you were talking about the singularity, artificial life, and you're right, we are on the cusp. And I was just not long ago reading an article about, they think that before we can even build probably an artificial intelligence, they do think, scientists now think that we can definitely map a human brain and the data. And they think that, you know, we're nowhere near the capacity to store or to scan the information, but they sort of the scientific logic of being able to actually upload an entire brain's worth of data is already something that is a reality on paper, at least. And so this whole concept of right now, I think that the problem sometimes with the amount of the years that have gone by between TOS and today is that you have ideas that are very relevant, as you said, but it can be, maybe especially for younger generations, we might be getting to the point where it's a little hard to get that message across, just because the visuals or the terms that are employed are a little dated. And so maybe younger fans might have a harder time realizing, understanding how relevant and contemporary and current some of those ideas are sometimes, because some of them are very, very, you know, you'll get it. And I think that's a great idea, because if you took a subject like that, you could really, in modern visuals, modern terminology, you could really then get the point across again very, very strongly. And then visually, yeah, like you were saying, the whole concept is something that modern Trek hasn't really done. Of like, I've always been fascinated by these sort of the ancient ones. You know, these Star Trek always talks about these civilizations that existed before civilization, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I mean, that's really like, the world is your oyster. You can think of any kind of visual environment design would work. And so yeah, it's a really awesome idea.
Yeah, you know, that was very creative in terms of taking it in that direction. And I do agree with you that would be a fun remake. And I can't get off trying to, not now I'm just fixated on trying to cast Dr. Corby. I can't help it. I haven't come up with the right name. I've got all that. I'm like, Lithgow? No, he wouldn't do it. it would really be fun to explore in this timeline. It really would, because you're right, the technology now would bring it up to a whole different echelon, I think. And conceptually, I think it would draw a lot of good science fiction folks. one of my questions would be, would it be that type of episode that would draw people from outside of Star Trek? Would it be too heavy? You know, does it have good crossover appeal? I think it would.
That's why I make the Westworld comparison, because I feel like is that not what Westworld is doing right now, right?
Is it? I mean, I see these are the things that...
to a certain extent. I mean, it's not an A-B comparison, but people are fascinated by that concept, so...
Yeah, I agree with you, Zach. I think that it's definitely got sort of very highbrow sci-fi concepts to it, mm-hmm. which then I think would help bring it into something which wouldn't make it like niche Star Trek, but then mm-hmm. would be pitchable as, well, it's also kind of a sci-fi. I mean, you'd have to still obviously be interested in science fiction, but it's very much a broad sci-fi theme. You know, you have like Ex Machina that came out, was it last year or 2 years ago?
I think.
That dealt with that, and it's definitely, I mean, the concept of artificial intelligence and robots, that's something that's since the 40s or 50s, it's still very much with us.
So. Well, you mentioned Ex Machina. That was a big inspiration. And now that's doing it right recently. I don't know if you, did either of you guys see Transcendence?
I haven't seen
it. No.
It was terrible. Don't see it. But I was so disappointed in that movie because it's about Johnny Depp and he's like a brilliant scientist and they transfer his mind into a computer.
I did see it. It was so bad that I actually forgot. Yeah,
exactly. The Spock forget thing and you just erased your memory. So disappointing. And because it's the same kind of thing we're talking about here. Yeah, human consciousness, the soul, like, does the technology twist it in some evil way, right? But you don't know, right? These are great concepts. It's all in the execution. Now, Ex Machina, a different approach, but the same, it's in the same genre, right? It's in the same vein of sci-fi. They did it right. Transcendence did it wrong. I trust the new creative team on the Kelvin Timeline films of Star Trek to do it right. And I think they would make a good crack at it. So that's my number three.
Yeah, you think Chris Nolan should take that project on?
that was not Transcendence was not directed by Chris Nolan. It was actually directed by his cinematographer.
That's not what I meant, but I meant if they were to do a reboot, right, version of it, and just the way obviously he's got a very unique style, and this is a pretty cool concept. I'm just wondering if he could take it to the next level. That's all. He could really have fun with it.
Yeah, I think Chris Nolan should direct everything, really. So.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
I think Chris Nolan thinks that as well, probably.
He probably does.
he's done quite a role. Yeah, that's for sure.
All right, Kim, what about you? What's your number three, man?
You know, I am a big fan of bottle shows. I really enjoy when the actual cast gets to really flex their acting muscles and drive a strong performance. And so, Nick, when you came up with this, you know, the first thing I started thinking about, well, what were the shows that could have been improved if we could have had better technology and drew us more in, you know? And this show is really not one of those in this case, because they actually did a pretty good job, I thought, but it's The Immunity Syndrome. And I was thinking with the Spock-Uhura relationship, it would add that much more tension to it. You'd really get to focus on the Enterprise itself, the mystery and trying to figure out exactly what's happening, the concept of, you know, space being, you know, a place where a cell could develop, one, of course, of massive size. You could, instead of just listening to what's happening to the Intrepid, you might be able to kind of visualize or what's going on. Plus, the whole crew was exhausted, which kind of reminded me of the beginning of Beyond, right? The crew was done. They needed some R&R. They really didn't get it. And that's exactly the same path that they were going on in the Immunity Syndrome. The whole team had just been through a lot. They don't tell us what it was. And then they get pulled off to do this assignment because the Intrepid gets destroyed. I also like that whole concept that the Vulcans couldn't figure it out because it was illogical what was happening to them. And there's just a lot of things about that episode that I really enjoy. But I always feel some of the better episodes is when it's, you know, and you could really expand upon this, right? Scotty could have a key role. The whole seven could really have special parts in an episode like this and be developed a little bit more creatively in solving the mystery, rescuing Spock and destroying the entity. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love the Vulcan angle you talk about, Ken. It's one thing I've always loved Vulcan culture, and I always feel like in a way, with the exception of Enterprise, it was done not a disservice, but it was actually, I feel like basically in TOS, Nimoy started to really, on his own, pretty much, it feels to me, craft not just a character for Spock, but behind that and through Spock, a whole philosophy for what Vulcans are, Vulcan is. And I feel like afterwards, after TOS, it was in the subsequent series, it was they latched onto only the most superficial part of that and never, and, you know, kind of like did sort of the 101, what we were taught of Vulcans by what Nimoy established in Roddenberry and TOS. And I really love what they did with Enterprise, with the Vulcans. And so any chance that there is, and definitely I think that the reboot cast and the people involved with the Kelvin timeline, if they are given a chance to show anything, you know, that kind of really showcases the Vulcans more, Vulcan philosophy, Vulcan culture, I'd love to see that.
Are you saying the baseball team from Take Me Out to the Hall Suite was not a nuanced collection of characters, Nick? Is that what you're saying?
That's, I guess, maybe what I'm implicitly implying.
No, that's a good suggestion there, Ken. Again, I know where Ken and I are always talking about how do you repackage this? I mean, we were just talking about here, Nick. You know, how do you repackage this 60s stuff to update it for modern audiences? Because there are barriers to entry to older entertainment. That's just the way it is. I mean, we grew up with this stuff at various phases of our lives, right? So there's always going to be a nostalgic factor for us. It's going to overcome any perceived cheesiness. But to like the general public, right? You got to get them past some of that, you know. The 60s veneer, as I say. So I think, this would be a good update. I mean, you could do some really cool stuff. Just, I'm thinking special effects wise, you know, and really visualize the void that the Enterprise goes in, the hole in space, you know. And I love the original amoeba effect. Like, it's iconic.
That's what
image.
I mean.
You don't have to change it that much, but you could just do more with it.
Well, you could have one of those beginnings like you had in Star Trek 09, right, with the Intrepid spinning into whatever. You don't know what the heck it is, and a crew of Vulcans going down. It would be...
Yeah, cold open that way. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, it'd be a very powerful opening. But, you know, I was just thinking about the... I guess the Uhura Spock dynamic would have a whole new take in this one.
Yeah, because in the episode, it's more about, like, McCoy and, as it always is, right, McCoy and Spock and then Kirk and who's going to go and all that stuff. And, oh, good luck, Spock. Oh, I can't let him hear me wish him good luck because of reasons, you know. But there's a whole other element. And much like in Into Darkness, where Spock was putting himself in danger and Uhura was getting upset about it, that would be a similar situation here. So that's a whole other wrinkle to the story, and giving the rest of the cast things to do, which is really what we want to do. Because, you know, in all these stories, I mean, we want to show off, you know, if this is the Kelvin timeline cast, they're all excellent. Let's have them all have their moment to shine, right?
That's right. And you know, and I think the ship could be struggling throughout the whole thing, right?
Now, it's a Star Trek movie. Of course the ship has to be falling apart.
Don't destroy it. Don't destroy it. But, you know, actually, you know, struggles and, you know, and that's where I think you could see Scotty and others really, really get into it, as well as solve the mystery.
By the way, small parenthesis, you know, this is one of those moments where every time I listen to you guys on Standard Orbit, I say, yes, 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 yes. Is why does the Enterprise have to take a pounding in every movie? Mm-hmm. Please, I don't want it to take a pounding in every movie. It's okay. It's first of all, sometimes I just want to see the Enterprise being beautiful. Secondly, then if it always gets nearly destroyed or destroyed, then the times that it should count, it won't count as much because we have seen that every time and we know
diminishing returns. Yeah,
yeah, it'll just get rebuilt in the next movie. So who cares?
There are plenty of letters left in the alphabet, my friends.
Right?
Yeah, that kills me. Absolutely kills me. Yeah, it is frustrating. It's if they don't start treating her like a main character one of these days, we're gonna just go slap some people around, I think.
Don't worry about the tangents. We're all about the tangents, as you know, Nick, on Standard Orbit. So please, any more parentheses or tangents, please take us there.
That's right. Fire at will.
So what is your second number two episode to be updated, remade?
Okay, so my number two is going to be the Out of Left Field, the Oddball. And for that, I picked the Tholian Web.
Nice.
Yeah, so I, you know, first of all, Well, I don't think I was consciously trying to like give love to each season. I'm not even sure whether I actually did, but you know, there's a lot of later season episodes that I love. And again, so there's a couple of things. There's Ken, you were talking about Uhura and Spock for your pick, and that played into mine. There is, you know, Uhura didn't have, as we all know, Nichelle Nichols represented, but she didn't always have the most character development on TOS, and it's one of the few episodes where she gets to do a little more than just, you know, opening channels. And I felt like in a Kelvin timeline version of the episode, you could definitely expand on that. And I don't know if it's, I mean, again, if we're going to stay within the format of an hour, you know, you have limits, but still, I think that it could be written in a way which makes her more essential in trying to convince Bones and maybe even Spock that the captain is still alive. Through that, you could probably, if you wanted to give Chris Pine / Kirk a little more to do than just appear and float around, you could probably, you know, use Uhura actually and basically write in sort of a B plot where basically Kirk is trying to make contact with her for some reason, you know, and she's trying to help him and convince the others. Mm-hmm. And I could see some good sort of banter between her and Spock if she's trying to convince him and he's kind of taking on the approach at first of, well, this doesn't make sense, you know, he's dead. I was imagining these lines of dialogue which could really play into the dynamic that we see on screen between Quinto and Zoe. And then from the visual effects, same thing. I was like, you know, this whole concept of the Tholian species, first of all, them as a species, and then secondly, their strategy. With today's visuals, you could do such cool stuff to kind of like represent visually that idea of like the grid, the pattern, you know, that they use to entrap other vessels. And then the species, you know, to kind of like, you same go to town, you can come up with kind of anything non-humanoid to represent such a different concept as the Tholians. And then I think the last reason was, you know, what I was mentioning to you guys early about like looking for episodes that kind of took advantage of the rapport between the characters and the actors and how well that seems to have gelled in the reboot cast. And we all know kind of the dynamics between the big three, and we all know Bones' role. But a lot of times I think it's implied in TOS, or it's kind of over time as we saw the whole body of work that we realized, oh, okay, this is what Bones is to Spock, this is what Bones is to Kirk. It's not so explicitly showed in TOS. Not as often. And so the final reason why I picked that episode is because I really loved the fact that it was one of those few episodes that really showcased explicitly the dynamic between Spock and Bones specifically. It reminded me of Beyond, you know, when the two of them are stranded or paired together. And I loved, I mean, what sealed the deal for me was that scene between, well, I guess the three of them in a way, when Bones and Spock go to kind of break open the seals and listen to Kirk's orders in case he dies. Because that scene, even though he's not there in person, really plays out. Like he lays out who he is and the importance of each of those two to him and tells them, now make it work between the two of you. And I just imagine that scene with Chris Pine kind of in his own way delivering that message and Quinto and Carl Urban, I was like, oh man, I want to see that scene play out.
You know, if we had a longer list, the Tholian web actually would have been on my list as well. It was one of the ones that came to mind. When we were thinking about this subject because you're right. You could visualize all this stuff a lot more interestingly. And, you know, maybe once it's, I mean, we all know Kirk's not really dead. So I don't know when they would want to do this. Like maybe after Uhura sees him and it's confirmed that he's not dead and we keep coming back to him, maybe we could see him in that alternate dimension all to himself, you know, just, I'm not sure exactly how I would visualize it, whatever. Of course he's floating around the Defiant or I'm not sure, but you know, he talks about it at the end, it's a whole universe just for me.
It's funny because I was thinking exactly the same thing the last time I rewatched the episode. It struck me like that scene at the end where he says, you know, I had a whole universe to myself, and I was like, what is that? That would probably drive someone insane because how do you grasp the concept of I'm in an entire universe? I'm basically a universe of one. You know, what does that, how do you describe that?
So, one, I think that's a That's a great episode to play with. And as soon as you say, I was like, yeah, I wish I had thought of that. One of the things I was saying, as you were saying about the different cast dynamics, I agree with you about Uhura. I'd love to see more for Sulu to do. But I'd like to get another take at it, because the one thing about the episode I didn't like was the Spock-Bones dynamic. I just thought Bones was overly aggressive. And I'd like to see it replayed to a point where it makes sense. It just seemed like the Doctor to me in that episode was way too rough on Spock, and it seemed very forced. And if you could do a redo with something like that, I'd love to see Carl Urban play it. Play it still as the gruff kind of guy. You know, he's got all the puns and all those other things, and he definitely has Bones down pat. Still on the edge, but maybe not quite so edgy, so that it, for me anyway, could be a little bit more believable. Because here's your second in command running the ship under a tremendous amount of pressure, trying to retrieve the captain, dealing with the Tholians, all this other stuff, and he was nothing but a pain in the ass.
It was space madness, Ken.
No, it wasn't.
That's my fanboy justification, but
yeah, you're right, Ken. Because I think there's even a scene. I think that in one of the scenes, McCoy kind of hints that he's affected, and he says, you know, I'm being affected too. And on my last rewatch of that episode, I was like, I call BS on that. You just caught yourself being a jerk, and you're kind of like, well, you know, I just I'm also affected, so that's why I'm being mean to you. I'm sorry, but I totally agree with you, Ken. Like, I there's a couple of episodes in TOS where I feel like, I don't think it was the Forest Kelly. I think it was just the way it was written. And
yeah.
It definitely pushes the character a little too far. I think there's one, was it Reds and Circuses? There's one of the ones where they're or is it where they're captured. And they're, I remember, they're both.
And they're in jail. Yeah, it's Bread and Circuses.
Yeah, Bread and Circuses, right? And Bones is such a, you know, I can't say the word on the family show, you know, it's a Spock. And that, you know, he's not quite as bad in the Tholian web, but he's definitely, I was like, you know, the guy clearly, at this point, you should know him better. You know he's affected. And you know he just can't show it, and mm-hmm. and you know he's just, like you said, he's doing his best to be the captain, and also to not show his emotions, and you're not helping him. But I really do think that, like you said, there's such a strong chemistry both on screen and I think off between Urban and Quinto that I can totally see them running with that and doing something good with it. Either it's you know, like you said, somehow Bones is more subdued, or it's figuring out something which could justify more why Bones would be this pissed at Spock. You know, if Spock had done or said something which could really push Bones more over the edge and could make us understand why Bones would be so angry with him.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like to see it go that way.
So for my number two, it's this is going to be a controversial choice, I bet. So everybody buckle down. Fasten your seatbelts, but this is, we don't have seatbelts on the Enterprise yet. But anyway, the Omega Glory. All right.
Really?
I actually really like this episode. No one likes it. Okay, maybe a few people like it, but most people don't like it. This, I gotta say, man, for it, if you're telling a good story and you want to have an antagonist, Star Trek is always struggling to find the next antagonist. I gotta tell you, Captain Tracy is probably one of the best antagonists on the original series. He is the only other captain who seems any kind of competency. In the original series, I mean, you have Commodore Decker just loses his mind. He loses his mind. I mean, I understand why. But then you have the Captain guy from Garth. The Daily. Oh, what was that?
Captain Garth, who's also lost his mind.
Captain Garth lost his mind. The Commodore who takes over in the Deadly Years, that guy doesn't know what to do. He's just overwhelmed. Oh, I don't know. Should we surrender, guys? So it's like no one is a good foil. Just for Kirk, right? Who is his true antagonist? That is a fellow captain. So I feel like he's like one of the best villains on there. He's one of the few people that can actually beat Kirk in a fight as well. So you can get some good. So you get some good hand to hand combat on the planet. So I'm thinking the Omega Glory. If you redo it here, I love it when you run into another ship. I would love for the Enterprise to run into another Constitution class ship. Get to explore an abandoned Kelvin timeline Enterprise or Constitution class ship. Walking around the sets, you know, you can get to see some really cool moody stuff going on there. Much like you would get to do in Tholian Web as well. Nick. So I like that aspect. I like just the visuals of all the crew being like crumpled into piles. You know, I mean, that's a very creepy, disturbing image. And I feel like, you know, think you know, X-Files style stuff going on when they're exploring the Exeter. And then they beam down, and I'm thinking beyond. I'm thinking you get most of the main cast on the planet, so that way everybody gets more to do. But they're separated, they're split up from the ship. They have to, you know, fend for themselves. And then I feel like you expand the scope of the whole thing, right? And this entire planet, you know, we only see this one little broken down backlot Western village, right? But if you redo it with modern special effects, you could see this. And I'm not all like, oh, you have to see it. I understand. You know, there is a sense of clever storytelling. I mean, you don't have to. Some things are more effective when Tracy comes in there and he's like, I drained 3 phasers and they still came. You know, that kind of stuff. That's cool to hear him say. But you could see some of these battles. You could see, you know, just a big horde of the Yanks coming to get the combs. Now, you could tweak the whole, you know, Pledge of Allegiance and the Constitution thing. I understand people's reservations against that. But people dog on this episode, and I feel like this is really cool. Like, this other captain feels like he's got the secret to eternal youth here, and he's going to use it for his own purposes. And Kirk has to go up against him, and I think that's cool. And that test, you know, Pines, Kirk has always been a bit of a rule breaker, and this shows, like, the ultimate, like, okay, well, I don't want to be this guy, right? He needs to run into people that are, like, so extreme that kind of snaps him back into forcing him to be Mr. Rulebook, you know? So I feel like all those elements will work pretty well, and as we've all been saying, let's incorporate more of the cast. Let's get Uhura down there on the landing party. Let's, maybe we can get, Cupcake down there. Maybe he's the guy that gets phasered, because you know he was supposed to die in Into Darkness, and that got edited around, and so he was in, and I know he was somewhere in Beyond. I don't know if he made the final cut of the film. He might have been one of those group shots. I know he was there. And I like Cupcake. I remember him from way back, the actor, when I forget the actor's name, but he was in a TV show called Playmakers. If anybody likes football, I don't know how, you know, the sports ball crossover here of the Star Trek podcast. I know probably not very much, but if anybody likes football, go seek out the show Playmakers. It is a brilliant show, and he's one of the main characters. He's a member of the football team. But anyway, let's get Cupcake in there. You know, let's have some fun. So anyway, it'll make a glory for all those reasons. I would like to see updated and tweaked. I don't know how to crack the whole this used to be the U.S. and Russia thing, but there you have it.
Well, you know, I mean, in a way, considering the current political climate, you can kind of do it. I mean, sadly, we are kind of, the dynamics between Russia and the U.S. currently are not quite what they were during the height of the Cold War, but we're slipping back. And so, you know, it's touchy, but I could see ways to do it. And like, just specifically, actually, outside of the whole, like, you know, Russia-U.S. thing, but like you were talking about the last scene, and obviously that's the one that I think draws a lot of the criticism, or sort of like, in the mind of a lot of fans, sort of brings down the episode because it's so, like, to quote John and Ken quoting TOS, bonk bonk, you know, on the nose. But I think that, you know, if you put it, because I would want to do it in a way which makes it work. But also, if you're gonna go that route, at the same time, you have to honor what the episode is. And so I would say, you know, well, we have to find a way to make it work, but keep it in somehow. And like, I'd say, you know, if there was a way to actually, rather than just Kirk kind of stepping up and all of a sudden being like, look, I'm going to recite some, you know, words of the Constitution, and we can play the American, the national anthem in the back. What if, you know, if there was something where basically he's trying to explain himself and make them see the error of their ways, and they dismiss or they even threaten him, and they say, well, you have no place, you don't know our culture, you don't know our past. And if he's already seen that it's a parallel world, and he's seen the Constitution to show that he understands exactly who they are and what they're talking about, he could recite words from you know, the Declaration of Independence, just to basically show them that he completely understands their point. And I could see a reaction where they go, oh, well, this guy basically knows our past, knows our culture. And all of a sudden, that's kind of his, he does it, which sort of follows the original scene. But then at the same time, brings it into, there's a motivation for him doing that on screen, as opposed to just kind of like saying, and now a patriotic moment.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, I think, you know, and I've heard that this was a part of the story that maybe got dropped over time, but maybe if it was like a lost Earth colony, and you know, maybe that would make it a little more believable than like the parallel evolution, because you know, we had that run in the second season where it was like every third episode was, this is another version of Earth, right? Crisis on Infinite Earth on the original series.
Roman Earth, it's Nazi Earth. It's
exactly. So anyway, what do you think, Ken? You're a big fan of that episode, right?
You know, I don't hate it. I think that you're an excellent pitch man, by the way. I could see you, you know, in front of a bunch of executives in Hollywood saying, and we could do this, and we got this, and blah, blah. Yeah, I mean, you were just on fire. You're on quite a roll. And as you were selling it to us, to the listeners as well, I was like, yeah, you know, I could see this, especially with Captain Tracy, the Exeter. There's a lot there that can be played with. You know, and I'm one of those guys that, you know, the ending of that, it didn't make any sense, but it kind of pulled it all together. I think that's the trick, is to what you were saying, Nick, and you as well, Zach. How can you pull it so this world would have something like that and make it more logical? Because I certainly don't have a problem with the Declaration of Independence, probably one of the best documents ever written. And, you know, it doesn't bother me if there's a little bit of patriotic theme to it. How that plays to a global audience, I'm not sure. But I think that, you know, you could find a way to make it work. So, yeah, I mean, when you first said it, I was like, what is he talking about? But as you pitched it, you know, I'm like, yeah, okay. I mean, obviously we're not talking a word-for-word, scene-by-scene done in modern times so it looks sexier. We're talking about putting the spin of the Kelvin timeline to it. And you could spin this pretty well. I think it gives you a pretty solid foundation to make a very interesting show using today's technology, new cast members, kind of maybe some new thought processes that could pull it together, like you said. And I think it'd be pretty enjoyable. I don't know, maybe because I've seen it so many times and it's always been an episode. I'm like, yeah, you know, get on to something else. But, you know, I'll look at it differently the next time I watch it just because of the way you played it.
Yeah, see, I've always really enjoyed this one. I know Brandon Shea Matilla has it. We always talk about his taste on the network, right? But he only recently got into Star Trek fan. I mean, he had all these favorite episodes. And then when he got on the internet and started talking to other Star Trek fans about it, he's like, oh, you don't like this episode? You don't like the alternative factor, right? So that's what he says. And so I feel the same way about Omega Glory. I mean, I'm just kidding. I'm watching, oh yeah, the one with the piles of people and the two captains fighting, and that's cool stuff. Or in the other ship, yeah, it's a good one. And then you get on the internet and you're like, top 10 worst episodes of the original series. Number one, the Omega Glory. I'm like, oh no, not that one. So anyway, I like you said, Ken, I feel like the core elements are there. You just need to tweak them a little bit, the presentation, you know, you update it for the Kelvin timeline. You got a solid one there. So,
and you know what, Zach, if I can, just another Nick slash Ken over tangent, but small one, because you're talking about captain versus captain, right? Mm-hmm. And okay, that's one, it's a tiny parenthesis. It's, I love Beyond. It's by far my favorite. I love 09 as well, but it's my favorite reboot movie. And it's definitely, it's now among my top four or five favorite Star Trek movies. One thing that I really, when I see it, and maybe it's just me, I have no idea. I've never actually really thrown that out there to other fans to see what they think. But every time I watch it, I must have seen the movie a dozen times already. Every time I watch it, there's something that to me feels like a missed opportunity. I get having Crawl being a lizard through two-thirds of the movie, so that you can have this cool twist at the end. But to me, and it works, it doesn't make the movie bad, it's not a problem. But to me, it's a missed opportunity, a huge missed opportunity, because for the sake of what is, it's just a trend. It's something that Hollywood does today, is we have to have like X amount of twists leading up to the biggest twist, which is at the beginning of Act 3, which is in like 18 to 20 minutes before the movie ends, blah, 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 blah. You know, you're missing out on a big Star Trek tradition, and I think something that would be much cooler on a dramatic level and narrative level is, I don't need to have Crawl be a lizard all this time and then turn out to be a Starfleet captain. Tell me, maybe not like at the very beginning, but by the time they've crashed, by the time Uhura and Sulu meet him, tell me, show me. Even he may look the way he does at the end, you know, we can, because we have the whole concept that he's had to maintain himself by using alien DNA, so maybe he looks a little weird and messed up, but reveal to me that this used to be a Starfleet captain. Because if you do that, you're introducing a whole other, I mean, the story can still be the same, so you're not like creating problems for your narrative, but you're introducing such a more interesting, complex dynamic. If you pit Kirk, and if he finds out very relatively quickly at that point that it's a Starfleet captain, it's a whole different thing. It's not, again, just like us, it's not like, well, this is an alien lizard guy, so let's just beat him without killing him if we can help it, but if not, we'll just phaser him. If it's a Starfleet captain, it's basically us. So what do? Do we try to get him back? Do we try to like see if we can sort of, you know, rehabilitate him, or do we have to kill him? You know, it makes how far are we willing to go much more nuanced, and it's a big Trek tradition because we have this in TOS. You know, like the insane captain, the guy. Mm-hmm. You know, we have Garth. You know, we have Tracy. We have like all these captains that somehow turned bad apple, or something happened and they went too far. And I was like, man, when I saw this, I was like, oh, why didn't you, no, I didn't need the twist. Yeah, I would have been totally fine knowing that Krall was human in the first 20 minutes. But anyway, dungeon closed, Brantis is closed. Sorry.
Now that's a good take there. I think that's, it was kind of unnecessary, I guess, but I didn't mind it at all. Even though before the movie, before Beyond came out, I specifically said, you know what? They do some stupid twist again, like they did with Khan. And that's exactly what they did, but I didn't mind it. The story was so well done that I didn't mind it, but I totally get what you're saying. So.
Yeah, no, I don't mind either. Like, you know, it doesn't hurt the movie. The movie is fine as it is. It to me, it's not so much that it takes away, it's that it could have been even more.
Well, it's a trope, like you're saying. It's a trope these days. We were talking about Christopher Nolan earlier. Right? He's decided that all his movies are going to have some twist in it, like The Dark Knight Rises. I don't like that twist at all. That was unnecessary. It was like, oh, you just undercut everything you're building up. Why did you do that? Twist, right? So don't do it that way. But anyway, the tangent is getting out of control. Ken, please take control.
yes.
Mike, I'll just say before I get into mine, was with your discussion about Captain Edison in the big switch with Krall. The one thing that they did do by kind of pulling us along, which I thought was kind of neat, is tying in, you know, the Enterprise era with the new era. And I think they were effective with that, right? And what they had to deal with. So, yeah, I guess you could say it could have been revealed maybe sooner, but it didn't bother me that he was human at all. In fact, like I said, there's so many people that really enjoy that element of the movie that it pulls you into, you know, it's almost like a passing of the torch done right, like unlike Generations, right? You know, here we go. So
what is your number two, Ken?
My number two is Enterprise Incident, and it's one that I've seen very recently, and it was amazing to me as I was watching the story unfold, and it was the one that was on during the Super Bowl, during the halftime show, that's what I was watching, and I didn't know it was on, so I just moved it because I didn't really care to see Lady Gaga, but at any rate, it was funny because as soon as they introduced the Romulan commander, I went, oh my God, it's Janeway. I mean, it you know, the voice, the size, the stature. I mean, you know, less sophisticated than Janeway, but still, she was very intriguing, right? And maybe it doesn't have to go in down to, you know, the woman scorn, falling in love trick that Spock did. They could rewrite that some way. But it would be awesome to have a strong lead female antagonist who's trying to bridge the gap, right? She wants to save the ship so she can bring it back, let the crew go, but win this prize. And then the whole thing with could you see Pine acting like a psycho? You know, it'd be kind of fun, right? And of course, McCoy had some brilliant lines in that movie. And, you know, they obviously could probably come up with Scotty retrieving the cloaking device versus Kirk dressed as a Romulan retrieving the cloaking device.
Oh, you got to keep that. You got to keep that. It's huge, man. It's a huge part of the episode.
No, you can't. I don't think it would fly. I just don't think it would fly.
Well, but before we get too far in this conversation, The Enterprise incident was my number one. So we're in alignment here. But anyway, I'll carry on. I just wanted to say.
It great. Was, but like, not anymore. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is.
Nice, Nick. Nice.
Right. If you're going to, you know, first of all, you know, that the big reveal when Kirk comes out as a Romulan would be something that might get lost, but you'd have to swing it somehow, some way, because first of all, you know, removing Nomad with a styrofoam cap on it is not that tricky.
But yes, please, they would definitely update the cloaking device.
We could update the cloaking device. We're talking about something that we think is relatively sophisticated. And I think that's where Simon Pegg could really be funny. If he went over as, you know, in disguise as a Romulan, perhaps with Kinzer or something, you know, to take that.
I see where you're going with that. I see.
To take that apart and then reinstall it and, you know, and in the meantime have some fun space action. I think it would be cool. But let me circle back. To me, the intriguing part of it all would be Zachary Quinto and a really strong, you know, A-list female lead in that role. And, you know, if it was done within the right time, you could see Kate Mulgrew in that role. I mean, I don't know why it hit me like it did, but I was like, dang, you know, like I said, size, voice, stature, captain, the whole nine yards. I was like, man, this is another Janeway just as a Romulan, and it could be played that way. It'd be fun trying to pick an actress to do it too. And then
I had one in mind.
Fire.
How about Kate Blanchett?
Kate Blanchett.
Oh, yeah. She'd be good. She has worn pointed ears before, so she.
Right. Yes,
yeah. So my choice would have been Rosario Dawson. Because Rosario I know she's a huge Star Trek fan. She wants to be in Star Trek. She said she'd, you know, be Klingon or whatever. Why not be a Romulan? Why not her be an alien commander, right? And I would love to see her in Star Trek at some point. I mean, she's a fan. She's on record as wanting to be in the movies or involved somehow. Let's get her in there. And I think that'd be a great role for her to slide into.
Like you were saying, Ken, I mean, I think that it's a great choice just based on, you know, today, a lot of the big popular franchises are trying to, you know, bring those franchises into modern times for the sake of, you know, as a commercial profit, but also I think, you know, as to use them as platform to really help us move forward. And I think that you're right. I mean, that's a great episode to, if you're going to transpose, because it even back then showcased a strong, you know, female lead, and you could do even more today with that idea, and yeah, just from that perspective, I think it's a great idea. I think taking that idea and running with it, I think to go even further, and you guys were talking about Scotty and the whole thing with the cloaking device / Nomad. you gotta have. I mean, if we're gonna do that episode, then I want to see Jayla involved because you know I'm thinking I see you know the whole like to not to bypass but to deal with the whole like. How to get this technology that we completely don't know at all and work it in 15 minutes. you know, I totally see something along the lines of the you know, that beat on Beyond when they're on board the Franklin and they're patching the whole short frequency thing. And then Scotty's like, I've got it. And of course, you know, Jayla's telling him the whole time, no, this is wrong. And then basically like, you know, he doesn't have it. And then I think Uhura tells him, let her do it. And then she basically fixes it in 2 seconds. You could use her being kind of this prodigal engineer, you know, Lass, as he calls her, who, you know, maybe Scotty actually in this case is not figuring it out because he can't. And then Jayla comes in and she's like, not like this, like that. And then boom, and then it works.
Yeah. Well, the other piece of it, and I think pulling Jayla in, boy, I hope she comes back. I really do. And I hope she comes back as an enlisted person so they can get her back faster. Otherwise, they got to wait 4 years for her to go through the academy.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I think would be really cool is kind of rewriting the whole manipulation part between Spock and the Romulan commander. I don't know if it has to be, you know, she just kind of falls in love or just gets so attracted that she you know, misses her takes her eye off the ball. It has to be more sophisticated than that. I think it could be a great element to a degree, and that could create a lot of great tension with Uhura when she finds out what's going on. So it could be fun there.
Yeah, with Spock and her, they could play on the fact that there's not many Vulcans left, so Romulans are like the next best thing. They could, you know, that's a whole another angle from the Kelvin timeline. We're like, hey, you know, we're your more your brothers than the humans are, you know. So I mean, that's an even bigger deal for Spock now in the Kelvin timeline. So that'd be, I would play up more that angle than the romance. Absolutely, that needs to be updated.
And maybe his feelings towards the Romulans because of what they did.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. Yeah, I think that I guess we can just combine. You and me here. I'll just combine our your number two, my number one discussion right now. I picked this episode for my number one because I feel like I was trying to think, like, I want to see where I was talking about the Enterprise gets beat up in all these movies, right? I want to see an actual space battle, a blow for blow space battle. I don't want to see two shots and it's over or something like that. So I was going down the list and I was thinking, okay, Ultimate Computer, no, those are Constitution class ships fighting each other. That's not going to translate well. Doomsday Machine, yeah, you got a wrecked ship and then you can't really do anything to the Doomsday Machine, so it's not really a battle. Balance of Terror is pretty close, but it's, again, it's that, like, cat and mouse game. Pops out, it shoots you, it goes away. It's not a true, like, all-out battle. I'm thinking you tweak the story a little bit, you know, perhaps when the Enterprise is getting away, they're coming under heavy fire, and they're having to actually defend themselves. Phasers are going off, you know, that kind of thing. So that's what I'm visualizing to finally see, you know, a high-end space battle for Star Trek featuring the original Enterprise, which we really haven't gotten to see. I know that everybody's like, oh, the Klingon War is coming up in one of these movies. Sure. You know, if for no other reason just to see an awesome space battle, I'd be all for that. But even in, you know, in Aaron and Mercy, they're going to fight, but they get stopped. So I honed in on this episode just because I really like it. It's my favorite episode of the third season. So there we go. I did 1, 2, 3 after all, one from each season. But this one for many reasons, but that's what really pushed it over the edge for me, trying to really incorporate a space battle.
Yeah, it would be neat. All right, Nick. Last cycle, buddy.
For my number one, I am so psyched, so happy that you guys actually picked that episode, because I was really hoping. I was like, you know, I hope, since it's only three, I'm not able to pick that one. So I hope one of these two guys picks it, because I was like, then we could have what I think of in my head canon as a two-parter, and this would be the sequel to it.
Okay.
Because I picked for my iconic one, Balance of Terror.
Okay, there you go.
I was like, you know, and I was like, oh man, I wish, you know, if this had been, if we had done, like, you know, top five, I would have definitely picked those two. But
well, we got you covered, Nick.
I know, right? Because now we have, there we go, we have our two-parter, and it works even better if you think about it. I mean, that's why I always see these as sort of like one being the sequel of the other, because once you get to the Enterprise incident, if you've had Balance of Terror, which introduces the surprise at the revelation that Romulans and Vulcans are alike genetically and that they have a shared heritage, then you can play up even more, like you were saying, Ken, on these feelings that Spock has towards Romulans in general, you know, conflicted and so on with the commander. But, you know, for Balance of Terror, I picked it because, so like I said, for one of the three, I wanted to have one of the big iconic, you know, episodes that usually end up on the top 10, if not top 5 fan favorites. It came down to between that one and the Doomsday Machine. And honestly, the Doomsday Machine, to me, and that's one of the things I was talking about with my friend this afternoon, is so perfect mm-hmm. as it is that it gets to that point where I was like, that should just not, it's as if you told me, well, let's remake Gone with the Wind. You know, mm-hmm. there's really just no point. It is what it is, and it should just stay what it is, or Citizen Kane. And so Doomsday Machine is so perfect in every sense, every actor, every, you know, it's just, there's no, you can't justify justify remaking it, in my opinion. What I liked about Balance of Terror is, like you were saying, Zach, the same thing that motivated you to pick Enterprise Incident is the ship to ship. Other than for Wrath of Khan, we still, in my opinion, there hasn't been a really good ship to ship movie or even battle in any Star Trek movie since then. I mean, some of them look visually really cool.
Six is close. I'd say six is close, but other than that.
it's close. Like, you know, like the idea, for example, like in for Undiscovered Country, you know, on paper, if I was reading the script, I would say, oh, this is an awesome battle. This is, you know, what happens, like the motivation, who's where, doing what and why. It's great. And the way, you know, you have the kind of like the Enterprise sort of being on the drawback because of the Bird of Prey, and then the Excelsior comes in. But the execution in this particular case, I thought was kind of underwhelming. Wasn't quite as good as it could have been. There in some movies it's the other way around. It's the execution is awesome, visually it looks cool, but the idea isn't great. And then I still think that it's lacking, you know, I want to see a big modern budget visual Star Trek ship to ship, you know, episode, a story where it's
one on one. Yeah
I want to see the enemy below, you know, but in Star Trek today. And so I was like, well, this is to me the best TOS story that has that. And so for the visuals, and I kept thinking of like things like, you know, Hunt for Red October and Crimson Tide, and then just applying that, those rules, and I was visualizing, you know, a Romulan bridge that would kind of have this sort of like, you know, subdued like red or blue lighting.
Does Ben Cross play the Romulan commander?
Well,
that would seal the deal for me.
There you go.
Then there you go. Sign him on.
Oh, but so how would the, so you think in the Kelvin timeline, the whole Vulcan Romulan connection is not common knowledge now? Because I would think it would be, right? After the events of,
you're well, right. I mean,
so you have to change that a little bit. Like it all still tracks, but there is the whole reveal isn't quite a reveal anymore.
You're right. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, I guess you're right. You'd have to tweak if, you know, I think you can still play the racism angle, you know, even if they already know. It could be somebody who's newly transferred to the Enterprise, and when things are brought back to the surface with the Romulans, that starts the whole conflict on the bridge with Spock. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. You definitely have to, if these take place in continuity, you know, like basically after the events that we've seen, you definitely have to tweak that revelation.
Yeah, maybe their parents died on the Kelvin. Now, of course, Kirk has that same story. So that might be redundant to have another character have that same backstory, but I'm not sure. So
it could, or you could just, I mean, he doesn't have to bring it up and say me too, but that might also work to the advantage of the story, because when he says, you know, there's no place for that on the bridge, you can, that gives even more weight to his words, because you can say, you know, he went through the same thing, and he doesn't have that same prejudice. So if he can get over it, then anyone can.
Yeah, it could work as a strength. Yeah. Okay.
Well, one of the things they could do is, instead of knowing that it's a Romulan ship, the ship is a mystery ship, right? And it becomes a big reveal that it's Romulans, something along those lines. I don't know. That. And then, of course, you know, it touches off not only Spock's feelings, but this other guy's feelings. And, you know, you could play with it that way. It could be, you know, just a space station that's kind of in a remote location, not exactly along the neutral zone or something along those lines, so that you could still have that, what is going on here? Oh, it's Romulans. You know, it could be in this timeline. The only times they've ever seen them is when they took on Nero and his crew. And then it's almost a PTSD event for Spock and maybe for the Navigator, because unfortunately you do need a new Navigator. So there's some ways I think you could play with it. But you know, this, you know, as people know that have listened to the show that we did on this subject, the 116, this is my favorite episode. You know, so I would love to see this remade in the reboot time frame. I think it would be an absolute visual spectacle with some, you know, especially today. You know, I think we've come a long way in race relations, but man, you know, have we ever been so divided? And I think this, you know, that you could play that theme almost more than you could anything else, and it would be super relevant. And kind of cool, but yeah, this would be a real fun ride, and yeah, you know, I think you picked a good number one, Nick. This would be a fun episode.
Thanks. Yeah, and I think, you know, Chris Pine's he's really shown in Beyond that if you give him the right material, he can definitely, he doesn't have to play kind of the bratty, you know, sort of frat boy side of Kirk. He can definitely play up very well the gravitas, you know, mm-hmm. side of Kirk, because that I think with time, you know, the character has become so iconic that a lot of times we sort of like caricature him and we see Kirk as this kind of like the cowboy, but he is actually a very serious and very by the book kind of officer. Mm-hmm. And you know, again, I think Chris Pine and Simon Pegg, you know, they definitely nailed that very well and beyond. And that is one, it's not the only one, but one of the episodes that really showcases that, I think, a lot in TOS. And I think that would give Pine a lot of material to show that Kirk, you know, is maturing into an officer. He's good. It can still show, you know, him being good at kicking ass and going to battle when he has to. But again, in this episode, it shows that he does it well when he has to, but he's someone who understands the gravity of what it is to actually have to fight and to destroy somebody and kill people, even when it's called on. It's not just a question of pushing a button.
Can never argue against Balance of Terror, so.
No, you can't, but what if the wedding at the beginning was Spock and Uhura, and we get real drama at the end of this?
So what, do we kill Spock at the end? Is that what we want to do now? Is that... He's got to get the mains back online to...
Get I don't out of know. There. I don't know.
That's a good wrinkle there, Ken. I like that. I think regardless that maybe it really should be Spock and her. That would be a nice way to, because gosh, really, they've been dating for years now. I mean, get, you know,
yep.
Do something, guys.
You can even have, I mean, you know, I don't know. It depends how much you want to push, but you could even have, you can twist it and you can have, she doesn't have to stay dead, but it could be Uhura who actually, you know, has to sacrifice herself or who gets killed in the process. And then, you know, whether you choose to go the inner darkness route of, you know, she's dead for 5 minutes and then she's mm-hmm. back.
He's pulled Khan's blood out of the freezer and then she's good to go.
Exactly. Yeah. I kept a couple of drops.
Yeah.
In that tribble.
Where's that tribble?
It's in that tribble.
So we already talked about my number one because it was Ken's number two. But my only, and we talked about it, pretty good detail, I think. The only thing I would add is the Enterprise incident is kind of Mission Impossible on Star Trek, right? And Simon Pegg is in the Mission Impossible franchise, so who better to kind of capture some of that feel and infuse it into the Enterprise incident than Simon Pegg? Now, and I really like your call there, Ken. I was thinking, oh yeah, we're gonna have Chris Pine and Poynter, he's gonna go over there, he's gonna do what Shatner did on the Enterprise incident. Having Scotty go over there as the Romulan, it would be so much better. So that's a great call. I just think about on Into Darkness where he's running around the Vengeance and he's having to talk to that security guard and just classic Simon Pegg stuff. That's I would love to see that. That'd be funny stuff. And see him and Jayla and Keesner all trying to get the thing to work. And because, yeah, that's to me, that is Scotty's most amazing achievement over his entire career, getting that cloaking device to work.
Now, here's a question. Would Scotty, as a Romulan, would he be able to disguise his Scottish accent? Or would he be a Romulan who's still, like, you can detect a little bit, like, he's trying to, but you can kind of hear a little bit of a Scottish twang there?
They would definitely play it for laughs. Yeah, they would definitely do that. But that's the great thing. Scotty, I mean... They find that, because even the original series, yeah, he was played for laughs, but then he was also serious because he took command when everybody else was gone, right? So he means business. So even they find that perfect balance even in the Kelvin timeline, especially with Beyond, where he, you know, he's serious. He's the one that goes and talks to Jayla. So Scotty is such a great character because he can go, he has a foot in both camps, right? He's comic relief, but he can also be serious. And that's what's so great about his character. And Simon Pegg's great actor and could definitely handle it. And I would love to see him try to impersonate a Romulan and try to get by those guys on that ship.
Yeah, that could definitely, especially if he's writing his own bits like he did for Beyond. You know, I could totally see himself writing some good stuff where like, you know, like I said, he's trying to pull off not having the Scottish accent, but it's coming out, you know, despite himself. Mm-hmm. And Pegg, you know, like you said, did a great job in Beyond with playing up the comedy in some scenes and then dialing it back. You know, when he goes to talk to Jayla later in the film, you really get, he's got this kind of like big brother, you know, thing coming on. And that's Scotty kind of like having, and even before that, I think I did like one of the few things I liked in The Darkness is Scotty being the voice of reason. And that to me, I thought was mm-hmm. kind of like one of the moments where I was like, yeah, this brings the fourth Beatle, you know,
the way
he was in TOS, where you had the big three, but then Scotty was also there when he needed to kind of like step up, and he's the one who does that in The Darkness.
You cannot break a stick in a bundle.
That's right. That's my grand used to say.
It's good. Good stuff. Well, Ken, your moment of in the sun has arrived, my friend. What is your number one?
Amok Time. For a one-hour reboot remake, I would like to see Amok Time. I really would. I think it'd be fun. I also want to see that fleet of starship parades around the planet, you know, when they pull away. When they talk it, because it's all about that. But, you know, it's just, you know, it just cements the whole bromance between the two of them. And, yeah, the fight would be fun. You know, I can see Balance of Terror being epic. I could see that being 2 hours easily. There's a lot of things you could throw in there. For this would just be, you know, played a little bit differently in the Kelvin timeline. There is no Vulcan anymore. Where are they going exactly? There's a lot of things that they could kind of divvy this up, right? Because it's going to be an interesting issue, because where do you go when Pon Farr comes? If you can't mate and you have to go home, what happens? And that could
They did do an arc about this in the IDW comic books. It was a kind of an interesting approach. So it was their own take on Amok Time in a way, but it was very, very different than the episode. But it did address the question that you're posing here, Ken. So
yeah. So, you know, it's for me, it just was trying to think of something that that could be done with this cast of characters that could be interesting.
How does Uhura react to Dufresne, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just watching it all play out, I think, would be fun. So that's it. I you know, it's a relatively simple in terms of plot, but I think it could be played with quite a bit. And, you know, plus the dynamic of him changing orders on Captain Kirk and trying to figure this whole thing out, you know, especially in the beginning, could really be interesting. And that's why I say, you know, with everything we've brought up so far today, you can really tweak these plots quite a bit. And I think there's a lot of things you could fiddle with here.
Yeah, you know, you could, you brought up the destruction of Vulcan, and you could even work that into the story. Like, instead of having it be a hurdle, use it to the advantage of the story. And mm-hmm. you know how Spock is sort of out of control almost. And you can actually work that into the story and in work it into the Vulcan spirituality, that without the energy or the root sort of, you know, this source of their home planet, it makes it that much harder for him to maintain discipline and to be able to get through it. Because you get the sense in the Amok Time, I mean, obviously Spock is not like, he's not a teenager, he's not a kid.
Right.
So it's not the first time that he went through Pon Farr. And so, you know, that to me, if you work an angle like that in the story, you could explain how maybe in the past he was able to get through it. And this is the first time that he really can't, because Vulcan is gone. And now it's caused this break. Or, you know, something is, there's like a ripple in the force, to quote the other Star Trek.
Yeah, they had a very technobabble solution to this problem in the IDW comics. So I would hope, and if they truly remade this as an episode, they would take a more original series style approach to it. Not so much technobabble. They don't have to, you know, the phase inducers and, you know, whatever. I love Amok Time. It's probably my second favorite episode of the original series. So that's a good call, Ken. You can't go wrong. I talk about iconic, right? It can't get more iconic than Kirk and Spock fighting each other, right?
Yeah, it's Nick made a great point when he was saying, you know, would you remake Gone with the Wind? Is it perfect the way it is? And maybe that's true. I didn't think of it from that aspect. And that's a good way of looking at it for this episode. But you got my head spinning when you made that comment. I'm like, geez, is it worth remaking? But I think you would have to change the story up. You'd have to figure out why it wouldn't work with Uhura. How would you figure out Vulcan? And who could wind up being his wife, or wind up being, you know, his quote unquote mate? You know, could that be Valeris? You know, we know she's bad. You know, I don't know. Just a lot of things you could play with.
That's true, because T'Pring might have died on Vulcan.
Yeah, and then you could have a pretty cool fight scene, which, you know, they in these new movies they do kind of take those things to a whole new level. And both Spock and Into Darkness and Kirk in the last movie, they have some pretty good dookaroos going on.
Oh yeah, I love the Jayla, especially her martial arts skills. That was great to see. That just great fight choreography in the mm-hmm. Kelvin timeline. Star Trek not exactly known for its brilliant fight choreography back in the day, with its
Kirk
stunt doubles and double fisted punches and flying kicks. But hey, it gets the job done. So
that's what I said.
You can also work in, you know, Ken, you were, I mean, you were talking about finding ways to use the Kelvin timeline to work out some of the kinks or make the story work. I mean, again, the destruction of Vulcan, maybe in this case, it's not about having an arranged marriage that has yet to happen. Maybe, I mean, you know where Quinta with Spock in Beyond basically is talking about he's himself wondering whether he should leave Starfleet to go make little baby Vulcans, as Bone says. Well, maybe, you know, he makes a decision that he's going to stay, but this could be in this story, the Vulcan Council has decided that there's so few Vulcans left that everybody has to kind of do their duty and get married to a Vulcan and make baby Vulcans. And maybe Vulcan calls him back and says, you know, you have to come marry such and such that we've picked for you because, you know, every Vulcan has to do their duty. And maybe he's
the logical thing to do.
Exactly. You know, so what do I do? Do I go with my human emotions or do I go with the logical thing?
Well, we could definitely play with that. All right. Any final thoughts, guys? First of all, Nick, I'll just say great, great, great story idea. This has been fun.
Yeah, that was a great job, Nick. It's always fun so we can just fanboy out.
I mean, that's what it's all about. I'm so happy I was able to join in with you guys. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I look forward to CBS receiving our podcast here and getting to work on these story ideas. And I'm sure they'll pick one of these to be the plot of Star Trek 4 coming up. So.
Hey, why not? Why not? Crazier things had happened, right?
Oh, man. No, that was a lot of fun. And hey, nobody picked, if we all had restraint, nobody picked Sitting on the Edge of Forever. So good job. I thought about Where No Man Has Gone Before, but I mean, I love it the way it is. And we talked quite a bit in our episode on our James R. Kirk episode, Ken, about that episode and what we might do to update it and things like that. But you know, we touched on all the points. We touched on the Kelvin cast, you know, the characters, the new dynamic between them and how to use those. We touched on, you know, personal one-on-one battles, you know, a hand-to-hand combat, and then we talked about space battles as well. So I mean that, and then of course the high concept sci-fi stories of Star Trek as well. So I feel like we hit all the areas in our remakes here, and we had just a fun conversation. So
yeah, it was a fun conversation. I enjoyed it, guys, a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, me too. And you know, I mean, I guess for final thoughts for me, it would just be, you know, on the one hand, what I liked about doing this is it just really shows, I mean, I was already sold on that idea, but it really shows, you can see how, I mean, yes, it requires tweaking and some logicking, but you really see how well integrated the reboot cast is into taking the mantle of TOS, that it doesn't take much to take some of the most iconic TOS stories and see how, it's not about making them better or anything, you know, but how the reboot cast could add their own flavor and make it cool and interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you know, what I thought was awesome is it shows how awesome TOS is just based on how hard it was for me to pick whether you want to say, you know, the most iconic, the biggest, the funniest, the best, because there were just, and I you know, I love TOS, so it's not like this is news to me, but as I started to kind of think about it, I was like, oh, this one, no, that one, no, this one, no, damn, that one. And you know, there's just so many awesome TOS stories, you know, and that hit all these angles, like you said, Zach. So that was really kind of a cool refresher of what these things are.
Well, making old episodes new again isn't the only thing we're discussing this week on Trek FM. Here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
The more that we dive into the foundational things that make Star Trek what it is, this is probably one of the most important pieces of that puzzle. It really is. And Nichelle Nichols, big, big, big part of that for obvious reasons.
Warp 5.
They think that it breaks continuity by having them in there, and it breaks established continuity. And I felt that way as well the first few times that I watched this episode. I was not happy to see the Ferengi in here. I thought it was fan service. I thought it was a little bit too much fan service. And I also thought that it didn't make any sense because of what had been established in The Last Outpost and the battle.
The 602 Club.
As much as I'd like to say yes, because I love him and used to love this movie so much as a younger person? I think no, it doesn't.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
He has worked with Robert Rodriguez. He was Rodriguez's cinematographer before Rodriguez started shooting his own movies, having worked with him on From Dusk Till Dawn. Not the TV show From Dusk Till Dawn, the original masterpiece.
That's always where we go right off the rails. You're throwing in the word masterpiece right there.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So you can find us on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can always stream or download the MP3 file from our website at trek.fm and grab the RSS link as well. If you're an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscribe button. That makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes and helps us increase our visibility for new listeners.
If you'd like to get in touch with us here at trek.fm, you can always find us on trek.fm/contact and look in the sidebar on the show page, or you can go to speakpipe.com/trekfm and please leave us a voice message. You can also contact us through Twitter at trekfm, facebook.com/trekfm, and The Babel Conference. Type The Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar.
So let me talk to you for a second about Patreon, Zach. Patreon is the program that Trek FM employs in order to get donations to keep the network coming to you commercial free. It is wonderful. Most of the hosts here on Trek FM are big contributors to Patreon and found our way onto the network through Patreon. So if you can spare any money, and we don't care what the denomination is, it really means a lot to us because there is a lot of content that we're putting up there, a lot of bandwidth, a lot of programming, a lot of equipment that we need. So please, if you can help us out, we'd appreciate it. And all you have to do is go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/trekfm, and you can click any donation you want. And we do have some incentives for you. So for $15 a month, you get to join the Patrons Roundtable where you podcast. And you know, again, that is where a lot of us started. It was on the Roundtable. I was on the very first one. I had a blast. And if you can contribute $25 or more per month, then you get associate producer credits for whatever show you like. And we love our associate producers. So please, 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 if you have the ability, it is more than appreciated. And speaking of our associate producers, thank you from the bottom of our hearts to Renee Roberts, Aaron Harvey, Nicholas Anastasio, and of course, Norman Lau. Thank you all for your support of Standard Orbit and Trek FM through Patreon. Now you can find Renee at Twitter at @Emrys_1701. You can find our buddy Aaron Harvey at GeekFilter. You can find Norman Lau at Starfighter1701, and you can interact with Nick and all of us on the Babel Conference, and that's where we find Nick hanging out all the time. Yeah, and you can find me on the Babel Conference. I love to hang out there, and you can reach me through Facebook directly or via Twitter. My handle is @BostonSCPO. That stands for Senior Chief Petty Officer.
As for me, you can find me on Twitter @MoronZach, that's MoreonZach, and I'm also the host of my own podcast called Always Hold On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman show from the early 2000s, and we're on Twitter @AlwaysMallville with one S. And also, I'm around the Babel Conference as well. It's always great to talk to you guys on there, making conversation about our shows, other shows, general Star Trek topics, anything really on there. So thanks for listening, everyone. Join us again next time here on Trek.fm for another episode of Standard Orbit.